sinless in part. I have the feeling that we can dispense with introductions of me. For that matter, they did dispense with introductions of me. And I can handle it. And we'll probably go home and cry, but I can handle it. I do want to extend, and I'm sure that everybody does, a Kit Chadesh and on the new Israel Center, which we are certain is going to be a source of great pride to the Orthodox Jewish community, and that we hope that there will be a great deal of the dissemination and study of Torah going forth from this building. First night of Yontif, I got up in shul in Harnof, my shul in Harnof, to speak, and there are certain things that came to mind, and I plan on expanding upon them this evening. There were a lot of guests, Chutzlar, it's all over the world, a lot of people, you know, Harnof, just as all of Yerushalayim, all of Yerushalayim. Guests from near and far, of course, I'm a nice fellow, and I welcome them, especially rabbis who visit. Then we give a very special welcome. I do have a soft spot in my heart for rabbis. So I welcomed all the guests, but I said that I'm going to have a difficult time with other guests. There are guests that are going to have a great deal to say. And I think that we would be well advised if we would listen very, very carefully to what each one of these guests is going to say. I even have the feeling that some of the guests that have and will join us during the course of the Yontif are very, very angry. They're disturbed, they're upset. And if we could only listen to them, if we could only listen to them, it may stand us in very good stead. Who are these guests? Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron. We just finished the day of Yosef. That, we will see, was most probably the most difficult one of the guests in our sukkah. And now we're up to David. First night of sukkahs. The Matam enough, we call upon Avraham Avinu to come in. Avraham! You know, every year I have this feeling, Avraham Avinu comes into the sukkah, Hashem Nachas, he enjoys it, it's a pleasure, you take a look at the Eden fulfilling the mitzvah, and Yiddish Kindlech all cleaned and scrubbed, and the sukkah is so beautiful. I have a feeling this time Avraham Avinu walked into the sukkah and he said, I don't understand what's going on over here. When I heard that my nephew Lot was captured, I didn't hesitate for a moment. I took 318 men, and I went out, and I fought until I brought him back. What do you mean you hesitate? What do you mean you leave a soldier to bleed to death for 6 hours in Kevin Yosef Ayakim? What do you mean you have helicopters flying around all out for hours today over our Ava? A soldier, a Jew, is wounded and in danger? Nothing dare stop you. Didn't you learn Pashas Lech Lecha? And Avraham Avinu most probably would also tell us that if you really want the world to come out there and applaud you. They will only applaud you when you have taken action in your own defense and in defense of all of those who are close to you, and you go out there, and as they used to say in the old days in this country, most of us may still remember, Lahakot otam shok al yarech. Just go in and do what has to be done. That's when they're going to, that's when we're going to have great respect for you. Did you learn Parshas Lech Lecha Avraham most probably tells us? When did Malki Tzedek, king of Shalem, Malki Tzedek, the great prince of peace, you understand, who prays for the peace of Jerusalem, but doesn't lift a hand, doesn't lift a hand. He's standing out there, and he comes out toward Avraham Avinu, and the king of Sodom comes out toward Avraham Avinu. Do you think they come running to him if he would have been an abject failure who was waiting around in order to make certain that no innocents are going to be killed, but our own, yes. Avraham Avinu was very upset when he came into the circle this year. And he says, in general, God promised me the land. All of it. You know how many times he told it to me? He told it to me time and time again. Avraham Avinu was probably certainly reminded us when he was in the sukkah, I bought the Ma'arat HaMachpelah for 400 shekel over Lasacha. I mean, just take a look over there. I'm telling you. I'm an eyewitness. Avraham comes into the sukkah and he says, that is there. I paid him in full. What are you talking about? You think I didn't know they ripped me off? I knew they ripped me off. It was worth it. It was worth it. So I paid more than in full for it. But it's mine. And you should know that it's yours. And perish the thought of God forbid ever considering giving it up. I'll be very angry. I'll be very, very angry. First night of Sukkot was a very, very difficult night. Avraham was certainly not happy with us at all. Second night, we think maybe we'll have it a little easier. In comes Yitzchak. Yitzchak is I can see the tears running down Yitzchak Avinu's cheeks. You're ready to give away the place of the Akedah? I was brought on the altar there. Shabu Shabayim, are you mad? You're ready to recognize divine sovereignty, United Nations sovereignty. What are you doing? And then, I know you. And then on Rosh Hashanah, you're going to get up and you're going to cry your eyes out. Akedas Yitzchak, Hayom, Lizaru, Barachim, Tizkot, Benishom, remember Akedas Yitzchak. Do you know what I feel like Yitzchak says to us? This is a second Akedah, and you're being okayed me for the second time. The thought that we will share sovereignty on Harabayit, or a world that is full of hatred, a world full of hatred, you know. You read the same things I read. New York Times, Time Magazine. Yeah. It's all Sharon's fault. It's all Sharon's fault. But we know now that the instructions were given a few days before that to begin the present. By the way, even in Israel's sense, I'm talking in English, but you have to know your Hebrew. You have to know your Hebrew. I tell you, I listened to the radio and became a sugar there. I mean, I'm calling Yitzchak, certainly, I can't take it. I just heard it again, was it on the 7 o'clock news or the 6 o'clock news? They were talking about the Eru Inn. No. Well, go a little slow. Go slow. Hebrew, this is Hebrew. Now, an Eru'a is an affair or an event. Do you see all over the country there are ulamot? There are halls in which you have Eruim, you have chasenes and bar mitzvahs and brisim. There was a time at which this would have been called the riots, the hitparuyot, or it would have been called by its real word, milcha. Today it's an Eru'a. Did you get a hazmana to an Eru'a? Who do they think they're kidding? There are affairs going on. You can go to the Gan Shoshanim, or the Gan this, or the son of the Gan, you know, or that Gan, or this Gan. An Eru'a. Do you understand? It's an Eru'a. This is what's taking place in the country. Not war. There are events. You know? This is part of an attempt to sort of, it's not as bad as, you know, an Eru'a could even be, can even take place when there is a ceasefire. You can have a ceasefire and have an Eru'a. Yitzhak, I'm sure, was extremely, extremely disturbed and upset when he came into the sukkah. Yaakov. Yaakov says, you know, you may not get it. You may not understand one of the most unusual psukim in Torah. Yaakov Avinu is the one who seems to condemn Shimon and Levi. Now just let's get the facts straight. A Jewish girl is being held hostage and Shimon and Levi go in and they take her out. They slaughter a city and they take her out. By the way, they did not give Shem 3 hours notice in advance. And you may not understand. It may sound as though I condemn them. But this I consider one of the most unusual psukim in Torah. Vayomer Yaakov, Yaakov meets with Shimon and Levi at home after the Eru'a in Shem, and he says, Vayomer Yaakov el Shimon vel Levi. Yaakov said to Shimon and Levi, Achartem osi, you have confused me. Lahavisheni biyoshev haaretz, you have given me a noisome, a bad odor, biyoshev haaretz amongst the inhabitants of the land. Baknani ubaprizi, vani mesei misbar, and I'm only a small group of people. Vinesfu alai, they are going to surround me, they'll gather against me. Vihikuni, and they're going to smite me. Vinishmaviti, and I will be destroyed. Ani ubesi, I and my family. That's the pasuk. It would seem as though this is quite a condemnation. How in heaven's name did you do what you did? The response, Vayomu, they said to their father, Shimon and Levi said to their father, Hachizona yaseh achoseinu? Will our sister be treated like a harlot? Silence. End of parsha. I have always had difficulty. I didn't really know who won that struggle. Who was right and who was wrong? In my youth, I always thought that Shimon and Levi came off, you know, they really gave it to the Tata. Hachizone yasas hachizenu. We're going to leave somebody b'shetach ha'oyev in enemy territory, and we're not going to react, and we're not going to respond. So I always thought Shimon and Levi were absolutely right. And then, of course, you know, everybody goes through a certain period, you know, when you're a little bit liberal. And then you become concerned, you know, terrible loss of life. It is terrible. Loss of life is terrible. We know that better than any other people on the face of this earth. It's a terrible thing. So I began to see Yaakov Avinu as being the one who's right. But then I came back to that pasuk. That which Yaakov says to his children, do you know what's unusual about it? There are eight first person singulars in that pasuk. I'm going to read the pasuk again. Now listen to me carefully. There is no other pasuk like this in all of Torah. In all of Tanakh. That's right. I just now took the leap of faith. There is no other pasuk like this in Tanakh. Vayomer Yaakov el Shimon el Levi. Yaakov said to Shimon and Levi, Achartem oti. You have confused me. Lahav ishei me. To make me have a noisome odor. B'yoshev ha'aretz b'kanani b'avrizi. V'ani. And I am. Metei mispar. But a few people. V'nesfu olai. And they will gather against me. V'hikuni. And they will smite me. V'nishmadeti. And I will be destroyed. Ani. I. Ubeiti. And my family. Wouldn't it have had more thrust and more power if you would have said, what did you do to us? They're going to destroy us. Anybody who wants to win an argument will always say, what are you talking about? Everybody agrees with us. 99% of the people agree with us. Why does Yaakov not say, take a look, the Ramban, women and children, all of us could be destroyed because of your rash action? I believe that what Yaakov is telling them is, Chevra, kol hakavod, you did a good job. And I say, Dafmatan, the only thing is, you took unilateral action, and I'm still the head of the family. You went on your own. Maybe you should have discussed it. Maybe you should have come to me. Ich bin euch der Mensch. I am the patriarch of this family. I am the head of this family. I have responsibility for this family. Maybe you should have discussed it with me. And do you know what happens later? Oh, you have to see the psukim afterwards. It says that they journeyed from Shem by Yehi Chitas Elokim. The fear of God was upon all of the nations of Eretz Canaan. And not only that, Rashi is going to tell us later on in Parshat Vayechi that they were attacked from all sides, and Yaakov stood up and he fought. He tells Yosef, I've given you Shechem Achad, I've given you another portion in the land. Ashalokachti miyadvei Amori, I took it from the hand of the Amori, becharbi ubekashti, with my sword, with my bow. I feel, the truth is, I feel a little silly that we have to repeat these things 52 years into the establishment of the State of Israel. We haven't learned a thing. Final point is, yes, when Shimon and Levi say, Tata, we got the message. Okay, we got the message. But you know what it was that motivated us. Hachazon Yasas Hachaseinu. How many hours were those, we were talking about it, how many hours were those helicopters flying over Har Eivol today? And by the way, when you talk about Har Eivol, are we talking about something that takes us back 3,500 years to Torah? We're not talking about the Har Eivol, Unze Har Eivol, the first place that Yehoshua bin Nun took Klal Yisrael. He took them to the great covenant that they enter into with God at Har Gerizim and Har Eivol. All right, you know, the fact is that Yaakov has a great deal to be upset, but I want to give a certain amount of equal time to the others who come into the sukkah. Moshe. Moshe certainly, certainly is terribly, terribly upset. Not only because of, more than anything else in the world, the one great desire that I had that was denied me. And we're going to read it in Ha'azinu and in Zos HaBracha, we're going to read that no, Shoma Lo Tavo, you're not going to cross into Eretz Yisrael. The promise is made to Moshe Rabbeinu time and time again, but you're not going to go. The greatest disappointment of his life is that he doesn't go into Eretz Yisrael, but there's something else that's bothering him. At the moment that all of this began, as Jews are in the process of marching out of Mitzrayim, do you know where I was? I was busy with the bones of Yosef. Because Yosef made us promise, Poko Yifod Hashem Elokim Etchem, V'ha'alitem Et Atzmochayim Yisayetchem, God will remember you, and he, please take my bones up with you. And that's what I was doing. And we took the bones of Yosef for 40 years, we took it through the Midbar. And in a matter of hours, the Israeli government abandons Kevin Yosef. I've been reading the papers for the last 2 days to find some place in the Sharm agreement where it says that everybody is going back to their original positions, but there's not a word about going back to Kevin Yosef. There's not a word about going back to the Bet Knesset in Yericho. What kind of fools are we? Everything will be mutual, but we will give up some of the most precious pieces of our history. If anybody can find out for me if there was any secret agreement that Kevin Yosef is going to return to Jewish hands, please let me know. Please let me know. If they're going to rebuild the shul in Yericho, please let me know. I doubt it. How does the Prime Minister go and negotiate? This is negotiating with a sense of no Jewish pride whatsoever. Moshe is very upset. That night when he came into the sukkah, it was really a very, very difficult time. There was so much that Moshe had to say, all the promises that I made, all the mitzvahs HaKadoshim Baruch. There are so many things that I told you all of those years, don't you remember a word? Aaron, I tell you the truth is, I can admit it. I was wondering what was Aaron going to say? So I turned to my wife, I said, what should I say about Aaron? So she said, what are you talking about? Aaron was Ohei Shalom, Verodei Shalom. Right? Do you know what Aaron was? Aaron dedicated his whole life to bringing a sense of unity between individuals and in Klal Yisrael. The Oslo process has torn Klal Yisrael apart, ripped us apart. And if that's not enough, our Prime Minister wants his Mahapecha Chilonit, his secular revolution that would tear it further apart. And you know what he got instead of a Mahapecha Chilonit? Why did he get a Mahapecha? He got loads of Eruim. Aaron would say my whole life, my whole ministry was dedicated to the idea of bringing Jews together when you've torn them apart. This nation is torn asunder. How is it possible to make peace with an enemy from without when we are torn apart from within? Would I have the ear of the Prime Minister? I would tell him, complete and total moratorium on talking to anybody outside. Don't go anymore. You got Bizyanis in Paris. You got our Pachim Punim, Azar Pachim Punim in Camp David. Bisgulofen to Sharm Sheikh. Most probably the only thing that he accomplishes is that it's a few days or a few hours out of the country. He's away from his desk. That's most probably, that keeps him going. You got this Janus wherever you went, stay home and start putting this country together. And the time is over to take the bold or Balin's creative measures in order to bring peace. You have to bring people together. And I'll tell you the truth. There were years just, you know, years of which I used to talk about Amas Yisrael and Achdus of Am Yisrael. I've had a great deal of difficulty. I haven't been able to talk about it for the last 7 or 8 years. We have to be realistic. We are a people torn asunder. There are wide gaps and great differences between those who want to trample upon Shabbos and those to whom Shabbos is the holiest of all days. There is a great deal that separates those who want to remove all of the barriers. All sorts of marriages should be permitted. That's, of course, going to make any unity in Klal Yisrael impossible. What are you talking about? So Aaron, most probably in his loving way, he says, nothing is going to work. You will not succeed in any of your undertakings as long as the Jewish people are torn apart from within. You have to begin to heal the wounds of the nation. I remember was outside of shul the Shabbos after September 9th, 1993. There were another people standing outside of shul. Some of those people, they listen to me, you know. They take me seriously. That's the way Palapartum should take rabbis. Anyway, I told them, you should know this is going to tear Klal Yisrael apart. I mean, this was 2 days into the process, 3 days into the process. I said, Rabbi, don't exaggerate. By the way, I usually say that every time an issue comes up at a shul in America, it always says, Rabbi, this is going to split the community right down the middle. No. By the way, none of them ever split the community right down the middle. Every problem, you know. If Yankel is going to get the Chas and Torah, you should know it's going to split the community. But I'm afraid that when I said the Shabbos after September 9th, 1993, that this process is going to tear Klal Yisrael apart, I'm afraid that I was right. All right, here comes the most difficult. That was yesterday, up until this... until this evening, was the most difficult of all, Yosef. I mean, Yosef has a real grievance. Yosef doesn't merely come into the sukkah, he comes into the sukkah very, very angry. You abandoned me! Klal Yisrael never did that in history! I'm the one who begged of you, bring me for burial in Eretz Yisrael, and you did it. And you abandoned me. And how do you think I felt about the soldier who bled to death because you didn't want to come in? After all of these years, is this the treatment that I deserve? But Yosef has a great deal more to say. Yosef says, listen, I want to tell you about a conversation that I heard. These fellows didn't know that I understood Hebrew, but I heard the conversation when I accused my brothers of being spies. So finally they broke down and they said, Aval Hashemim Anachnu, but we are guilty about our brother. We didn't listen to him. We didn't listen to his cries. We abandoned Yosef for the first time. Now you've abandoned me for the second time. They sold me to the Yishmaelim. You gave me to the Yishmaelim. But Yosef says, no, that's not the important. That's not the real important part of the conversation that I was privy to. Reuven spoke up. And Reuben said, Halo amarti lachem, I told you, al techet uvayeled. Don't sin with this boy. Vihine domo nidrash. His blood is being demanded of you. I never understood Reuben until now. What didn't I understand about Reuben? I told you so. You know, we always look down on this, I told you so. So what are you telling me, Reuven? What have you added to the brilliance of this conversation? Your brothers have finally raised their hands. They said, bring it the Alma Kula. We are guilty that we abandoned our brother. And you have to, you know, dig, you know, rub it in. I told you so. Well, I tell you, I'm a Reuven, and we all have to be Reuvens. We predicted every step of what took place in the last 7 years. We told you so. You were warned. We stood on the highways with the signs, Al titnu lahem rovim, don't give them weapons because they're going to use it against us. I told you so, and they're using it against us. We have to rub it in. There isn't a single thing we predicted that didn't come true. Reuven is right, I told you so. You brought tragedy upon the family for 20 years, he tells the brothers. I told you so. And you know what? All of a sudden, the left now doesn't want to hear, I told you so. And you know, when somebody starts this on, when there's some kind of a, you know, these talk shows and these programs, somebody starts the I told you so bit, they shut him up. But I remember the I told you so's of Yossi Balin and Yossi Shahid. How many times did they laugh at us? Are there katyushot over Ashkelon? Where are the katyushot that you promised us are going to fall over Ashkelon? Well, you got much worse than that. They have to be told they were wrong. They have to be told that we warned you every step of the way. We told you in 1993 that Arafat broke 200 agreements that he made with his Arab friends. Do you think he's going to keep one agreement with us? And you still go ahead and you sign silly, stupid, idiotic agreements. I told you so. We told you so. And you know what? Whenever we told you something, you treated us with contempt. We were the Yamin Kitzoni. I think once for once we have to begin using a different two words. There is no Yamin Kitzoni. The Yamin is reality. There's a small Kitzoni that are the destruction, God forbid, of this country. Small Kitzoni. Keep saying it, small Kitzoni. And if you think that, well, they have finally come to their senses. Smolan afilu al pischoi shel gehenim einek shav b'tshuva. A leftist, even when the gehenim is open before him, does not do tshuva. And they're still talking about, well, when will we sit down? Yesh partner, ein partner. Yesh partner, ein partner. Yes, partner. And I recall something. Well, why did I recall it? Because I think I read Charles Krauthammer in the in Time magazine today. Don't read the rest of it. The rest of it is ugly. But Charles Krauthammer on the next to last page. So remember something. I thank God I have it on tape. The tragedy over here is the following. The tragedy is the thought that problems exist in the world in order to be solved. What do you do with a problem? You solve it, and you go on to the next problem. The idea that maybe there are some problems that are not solvable. Maybe there are some problems that in this generation and the generation to come, and maybe, I don't know how long, they're just not given to solution. And when you try to impose a solution, you are heading for absolute disaster. I said it on January 31st, 1994, in Toronto, Thornhill. I'm so impressed with myself. Don't take me seriously. But I said it. And I told you so that I said it. The idea that every problem can be resolved. It isn't necessarily so. Unfortunately, that is the Jewish condition, certainly in this country. There is no solution at the present moment in time. There is no solution. And any of the solutions that have been put forward are simply the ingredients and the prescription for absolute disaster. Do you remember the Johannesburg mosque speech of Arafat in May 1994? First, the place went crazy. Arafat had said in this speech that, the jihad to Jerusalem. So of course, our elder statesman, the world's elder statesman. Ah, there is a jihad of war and there is a jihad of peace. This is our jihad of peace. And he thought, and you know what? There are people who bought it. There are people who bought it. There are simply, unfortunately, problems that are not given to solution. And when you try to impose a solution, that's the prescription for disaster. By the way, there's something else. Either I've been out of it, and I've lost track with what's going on in this country, though I don't think so. It took me a few days. And here I have a sneaky suspicion that our government has simply hidden information from us. Everybody today is talking about the Tanzim. How many days did it take you to figure out what the Tanzim are? Do me a favor. Yeah. Did you hear about the Tanzim more than 3 weeks ago? Never heard about the Tanzim? Seems that these Tanzim have been there in the field, 2,000 of them, leading, prepared to bring all sorts of destruction. All of a sudden, they came out of the closet. There are things that come out of closets. How come we didn't know about the Tanzim? Everybody in the world's talking about the Tanzim here, the Tanzim here. You can't Tanzim on two chasanis. Am I some Tanzim? We were not told the truth. We were not told the truth. They didn't disclose to us that in every town, village, and hamlet, there are people whose job is to rouse the rabble. All of a sudden, now we know about the Tanzim. Well, I will never forget the day that Oslo II was signed. Because there was something so strange about it. If you watch TV, they come marching out of the meeting of the cabinet. On the one hand, it was very funny. It was very funny. On the other hand, it was tragic. I think the first one was Sarid. I don't have to remember this precisely. I just remember four members of the Knesset, of the government, of the Rabin government. Four members of the Rabin government were asked, what took place in there, because they had approved Oslo II. I would have assumed that they would have said that we've taken a significant step toward ending the conflict between ourselves and our neighbors. We hope and pray, not praise too much, I'm sorry to be back. We hope that that this will contribute to peace in this region. That's not what they said. Four of them, and one was Barak, said the same words. It was most probably the mantra that they had been throwing around while they were in the cabinet meetings. Chusla chalom Eretz Yisrael hashlema. The dream of greater Israel has been ended. And I listened for four of them in a row. This is what you walked out of a cabinet meeting that decided on such an important step toward peace? This is what was on your brains? This was on your head? Chusla chlom Eretz Yisrael hashlema. Well, I want to tell you. Chusla Oslo. It's the end of the Oslo process. Your chalom belahot, your nightmares of Oslo are over. And if you don't know it now, then it's going to be not only at your own great risk, it's going to be at our risk. I told you so. I can see it. I mean, I've seen it before my eyes so often. I think it was Yitzhak Levi or Shaul Yahalom who said that, you know, on matters, a few years ago, on matters, no, about a year and a half ago, matters of real significance, those decisions cannot be made by 10 Arab members of Knesset. Yossi Berlin. אני לא שמעתי גזענות מכוערת ומתועבת כזאת. I have not heard such ugly and disgusting racism. What would he say now when the 10 Arab members of Knesset have been the instigators of a revolution of the Israeli Arabs from within? When they've shown that, will he also say now, Gizanut? Gizanut? That was a rhetorical question. No, my wife always asks me rhetorical questions, and so does my brother-in-law. By the way, that's my brother-in-law over there, Michael Rubinoff. See that fellow smiling over there? He came on Aliyah about 5-6 weeks ago. My wife's brother, and we're proud of everybody in the family that comes on Aliyah. And now, he and his sister are always asking me rhetorical questions. But they think I know all the answers. You know, they always ask me, why is Barak doing this? Why is this happening? I mean, I take it, on the one hand, I used to take it as a compliment that they think that I really know everything. And it's very difficult for me to say it. To them, you know, I don't really know everything, you know. I know some things. All those years that we were abused and we were reviled, I know so many places in the United States that would not invite me to speak only because I have the reputation of being Yamin. I left out the second part. Yamin. We were the odd men out. They didn't want to hear from us. They didn't want to hear our rabble-rousing and our warlike kind of statements. But we spoke the truth. And we have to continue to say what Reuven did. Reuven said it, I told you so. I have great respect for him. And I have great respect for the fact that Torah wrote that in over there. And that's what Yosef says when he comes into the sukkah. When I heard Reuven say, I told you so, the man was on the mark. And let nobody dare tell us, no, you can't say that. We've been abused long enough. And now we know that we're fighting. We are fighting for our lives. We're fighting for the lives of our families, our children, and our grandchildren. And I tell you, we may not... if I would have the kayach, I would take 500,000 Jews to Gilo. I'd take 500,000 Jews to Gilo. I don't know... Do they think that the tank in Gilo is a sukkah decoration?
The tank is there. They should raise Beit Jala to the ground. I don't understand. By the way, before they haul me off to prison, let me say, I don't mind if they give them 3 hours notice to get out of their homes and then raise Beit Jala to the ground. That's all. Our people living in our city, in our capital, should not be barricaded in their homes because of fear of fire that's going to come from across the road. I don't understand. It's mad. United, no country in the world, no self-respecting country in the world would do this.
I said it in shul once. I only have David left, so, but I'm not finished with Yosef yet. Yosef, I mean, I can't, just because we said Tilm doesn't mean that I have to lose my few minutes of Yosef. I did say it a few years ago, and I know that at the time I said it in shul, it was certainly courageous. It was courageous, because people don't want to hear it. People don't want to hear it. I think that there are many people in this country who have to go and prostrate themselves upon the grave of Meir Kahane, Hashem Yishmor, upon the Arab living in the Palestinian Authority lands. But you can have Jews in this country, unfortunately, who will trample everything that is holy to other Jews. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I was reading when I was saying that, I was looking yesterday to find some mention of Kever Yosef in the Sharm el-Sheikh agreements. So all I said, the two sides agree this, the two sides that. Before Yom Tov, I spoke to one of my friends, colleagues in the States, Rabbi Pruzensky. Rabbi Pruzensky of Teaneck, New Jersey. So he tells me, Shalom, we had a meeting last night of all the spiritual leaders in the Teaneck area. There were Muslims, there were Christians, there were Hines, and there were Hare. And they drafted a resolution, you know, to call for peace in the area. It seems that there are Muslims, Arabs in Passaic and in other places, in other words, is Melechnish Kinhonik in New Jersey. Okay. So there, he says there were 30 people in the room, and they asked, does anybody have any objection to the text? Rabbi Pruzensky raises his hand. He says, yes, I object. Well, what do you object to, Rabbi Pruzensky? So he says, well, you're calling for a stop to the mutual bloodshed. Mutual? Who started? What are you talking about? You mean mutual bloodshed? Since when is self-defense bloodshed? You know what they did? They removed the word mutual. So when I read the Sharm el-Sheikh agreement, the two sides agree this and the two sides agree that, ki'ilu as though the two sides are equal. This is an aggressor, and this is an aggressor. This is an aggrieved party, and this is an aggrieved party. One could read through that and not at all know that there was an aggressor and there was a victim. This is what my prime minister went to Sharm el-Sheikh for? To agree that we are equal aggressors? Rabbi presents, Geshef Nachas. This is the way you have to do it. All right, we're coming down to the end. I think of course, the last one is David HaMelech. David HaMelech would simply tell us exactly what Yitzhak said. Anybody who goes through Tanakh, especially Divrei Hayamim, that most people don't get to,
all the effort and all the energy and all the time and the wealth and the money, everything that David did in order to purchase and prepare Har HaBayit for the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. Why is he shedding a tear? He's in the sukkah now. Right now he's in the sukkah. He says, Mein Har HaBayit, my Har HaBayit. All that I did, all that I prepared, all of the plans that I made, my Har HaBayit, and you're ready to give it over to God's sovereignty, to Arafat's sovereignty. You're crazy, you're out of your minds. Let me just conclude, and when I say conclude, I mean conclude now. It was recalled to me last night. It was something that was making the rounds, I think, about 6 or 7 years ago, maybe at the beginning of the Oslo process. A few psukim in Yeshayahu. It's worthwhile when you have a chance to take a look at it. It's chapter 28 in Yeshayahu. It begins with Pasuk 14, and I just want to read 2-3 psukim and the Targum Yonatan ben Uziel. Targum Yonatan ben Uziel, who revealed the secrets of Tanakh.
Says Yeshayahu, Lachem therefore shimu dvar Hashem anshei latzon. Therefore listen to the word of God, you jokers. Who are the jokers? Moshle ha'am hazeh asher b'Yerushalayim. The rulers of this people who are in Yerushalayim. Ki amartem, because you said, you jokers who are leading this people, you have said, Karatnu brit et mavet, we've made a covenant with death. Rashi explains we've made a covenant. No more death, our children and our grandchildren. You know, as long as you use the word peace and you use children, you're a good leftist. You have to use those words often, you know. Children, peace, no death. Okay? So the jokers in Yerushalayim, Yeshayahu says, you said, Karatnu Brit et Mavet, we've made a covenant with death. V'im Sheol Osinu Chose, and with the grave, we have made a contract or a treaty. He says, Anna, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. Says Targum Yonatan ben Uziel, Arei Amartan, you said, Gezaino Kiyamin Ketola, we have made a treaty, a deal with death. V'im Mechabla, Avadno Shlomo, and with terrorists we've made peace. With Mechablim we've made peace. So he says, no, it's not going to work. You cannot make peace with Mechablim. In Mechablim with terrorists, Avadna Shlomo. And he goes on to say, Lachen Komar Hashem, so says God, it's not going to happen. It's never, ever going to happen. V'chupar britchem et mavet, v'chazutchem im sheol lo tokum. The treaty that you've made with the grave is not going to be fulfilled. And there Targum Yonatan again says, Ushlomchen, the peace that you make in Mechabla with terrorists, Lo Yitkayem, it's not going to last. It's not going to work. I think it's about time that with a sense of bowing our heads before the words of a Yeshayahu and a Yonatan ben Uziel, or bowing our leadership has to bow its head before the realities, to be able to see them, to be able to see the reality in which we find ourselves. It has not been an easy circus. Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, David have had a great deal to say to us. And there's a great deal more that has been left unsaid that they have to say to us. And if we would only be able to listen and hear, it would make all the difference in the world. So Shana Rabba, Yehi Ratzon B'lifnei Avinu Shebashamayim, we said Tillim, that in Yirtzeh Hashem, there will be an end to the bloodshed, an end to the blood-stained process that has brought all of this upon us, an end to the blindness of our leadership, an end to the lack of self-respect that we have.
we are laughed upon in the world. The world looks at us as though we are fools. No other people would tolerate what we have tolerated. No other people would have responded the way we responded to the terrible, horrible lynch that the whole world saw. No other people would have remained this silent under these circumstances. We are in a state of war. Halavai, we will learn from it. Halavai, the Anshei Latzon, Moshe Ha'am, Asher B'Yerushalayim, will have learned the lesson. Chag Sameach.